Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach, a podcast that unpacks international trade and how it affects you without putting you to sleep.
Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach. I am Lori Wallach. Today, we are going to talk about tariffs and manufacturing and cut through all of this hysteria about, trade war, tariffs. And we're super lucky to have with us Scott Paul to talk about this. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, that's also known as AAM. That's a partnership of some of America's leading manufacturers and the United Steelworkers Union. Scott and AAM have worked to make American manufacturing and made in America top of mind concerns for our national leaders and for the public. Scott has helped to lead the turnaround, a turnaround that's really critical to making our economy work for working people and rebuilding our resilience and our national security. So welcome, Scott Paul.
Lori, it is a pleasure to be with you.
So there have been some recent news stories that are basically the folks who got us into the old job-killing trade agreements. These lobbyists have started pushing stories about, tariffs, so scary, so dangerous. There could be a trade war. How do you see the way we're situated as we head into this presidential campaign?
We've been in a trade war for a long time. It's just been very one-sided. We've just never engaged. And so we've suffered a lot of the losses. And I think the difference now is that the economists, the global corporate community, and the neoliberal establishment are all kind of in shock that their 30-year way of doing things has been upended. And it's a bit like if you're a kid, you discover Santa Claus isn't real. I think that they're in a state of disbelief right now. And so they throw these terms at you like trade war, which is meaningless, or alarming and very loaded studies saying it'll do this, it'll do that. When if you just look outside, the impact that they claim is not the impact that Americans feel. But most of all, it is a very reactionary type of approach that they're taking, because we now have a tool in the policy toolbox that we had not sharpened for basically three or four decades. And if it's utilized properly, it can grow jobs in the United States, it can grow economic and national security, it can help everyday people. If you have a PhD in economics, you're not going to see that because you're still in this state of disbelief. Your head is buried in that canon of David Ricardo or Adam Smith or whoever, and you can't look up and see what's going on around you.
So AAM has organizers around the country, staff who talk to people every day, and you do a lot of opinion research, focus groups, polls. To me, it seems like for decades, the American public was on to the fact that old model on trade really was bad for people across the country, and not just in the Midwest, in California, in New York, in big states, communities were losing. And a lot of Democrats in Congress caught on to that a long time ago. You and I first met fighting a bad trade agreement in the 90s, the North American Free Trade Agreement. But it seems like more policymakers have caught up to that reality, that what was promised didn't work, and in fact, it was devastating. And I'm wondering what you hear. How is it really being experienced compared to all this Washington-based hysteria Team Status Quo is trying to generate?
We've done public opinion research and focus groups and just conversations with people in communities for as long as we've been up and running, which is 17 years. And I'm going to be honest here. I wish more people thought about trade policy in their everyday lives. They don't, right? I mean, they care about how their wages are or if there's a factory in a town that closes down. They do care about that. But when you have a conversation with them about ways to bring manufacturing jobs back to the United States, unprompted, and this is very consistent, the first thing they say is tariffs. That's the first thing they say. That is the first policy tool that they wish someone would grab onto. And then that's also reflected in the polling. And we've seen very consistently among Republicans and among Democrats that over the years, that particularly when you take the politics out of it, that there's been overwhelming support for policies, including tariffs, to boost manufacturing. And people felt very disaffected. There were no Democrats talking about this other than the very progressive ones who you and I both know. There were no Republicans talking about this. And so now there is a conversation about it, which has changed. But the people, the voters, have been way ahead of where the policymakers have been for a couple of decades now.
Well, let's talk about this word tariff, because I see the folks who want to go backwards to the bad old trade policies, trying to make the word tariff equivalent to cancer, cockroach, tornado. It's something that's always bad. First, let me just define it. A tariff is a border charge put on a product that comes from another country. Countries negotiate what their normal everyday border charges are, but tariffs can also be used as penalties to counter trade cheating. Depending on the level of the tariff, it either sends an incentive, i.e. knock off that cheating, end that bad practice, stop that subsidy, or if it's high enough, it keeps the unfair product out altogether. It just makes it not economically viable. So it's a really neutral policy tool. What's the history of tariffs and what are their uses now?
The only thing I would add to your explanation is that unlike a sales tax or an income tax, it's not something that a consumer, an average American, ever sees. It is paid by importers. It is paid by companies who are choosing to bring products in to the United States. And that's a specific choice that they have made. And I think that's very important. The other aspect of this is that tariffs have been part of American economic policy since we were founded. And they were viewed by great economic thinkers like Hamilton and George Washington, Henry Clay, or Abraham Lincoln, lots of folks, as being one aspect of a policy that was going to grow America's economy, along with developing infrastructure and developing the capabilities for other industries or internal investments. And it was a primary revenue source for a very long time. That shifted, but the utilization of tariffs was very important. And the other thing is that we've also used it as an incentive for countries to join us in diplomacy and alliances, in changing practices that may not benefit their own workers or their own environment. And so there have been a number of different kind of carrot and stick approaches with respect to tariffs. And it's really only in this kind of like Bretton Woods post-World War II era and turbocharged when global companies took over trade policy that it's been viewed, as you said, like this terrible T word that people can't even talk about without getting sputtering mad. I mean, Adam Posen, the president of Peterson Institute, he turns red when he talks about this stuff. But to most people, it's an everyday thing and it's a legitimate policy tool. And so, yes, we should have a conversation about what tariff rates should be because we've had a very ineffective conversation about what they should be over the last couple of decades. And as a result, we had lower quality jobs, we had less manufacturing, and in some cases, we couldn't even supply the stuff that we wanted because it was all made overseas. So there is a role for tariffs, and it's about time that it's been brought back into the discourse.
I want to underscore something Scott just said, because you're going to hear the story about tariffs are a charge against the American consumer. And in fact, unlike, say, a sales tax, tariffs are paid by the importing company. There are all kinds of cooked up studies that basically just take the number of border taxes that would be charged as a penalty for trade cheating, divide it by the population, and tell you that's how much more you're going to pay. When in reality, when a tariff goes up, frequently when it's high enough to do its job, it means that that trade is not coming in. Now, the tariffs aren't set for the whole world at the same time. Each country gets to decide its own tariff policies. We have unilaterally walked outside in a blizzard, stripped all of our tariffs, and we have stood out there trying to get everyone else to come outside. A lot of other countries said, look at those crazy people. They have unilaterally gotten rid of their tariffs and they are freezing out there as their manufacturing dies. So the U.S. has very low locked-in tariffs. A lot of other countries, including democracies, have in many instances higher tariffs. How do we deal with that?
Lori, that is a really great point. And when, again, because there's this model of trade policy that I think, quite honestly, the global corporations try to confuse people with. But again, these are choices. And we chose to set our tariffs, our most favored nation tariffs, and applies to almost every country that isn't bombing the United States or our allies at a very low rate. I think the average MFN tariff is somewhere between 3 and 4%. If you draw that up against almost all of our trading partners, you're going to find a disparity. There is not reciprocity. That's the dirty little secret. So there's a couple of things to unpack here. When we are seeking reciprocity, it would mean in most cases, we're going to need to raise our tariff rates up to another level. And if we want to counter what are viewed, I think, economically as market distortions and that we would call bad environmental practices or weak labor rights or currency manipulation or intellectual property theft, we need to jack them up even more. It is the global corporations that have benefited from this policy. They have a lot at stake. And so they want to make it sound like it would be this horrible economy wrecking thing if we did this. And the truth is, and I'm just going to say, Paul Krugman just recently talked about this. This guy has a Nobel Prize in economics. He is more free trade than not. And he was like, a 10% tariff? Actually, it wouldn't do much to the U.S. economy. The truth be told, something like that would not have a really measurable economic impact, notwithstanding what all of the shills for the global corporate trade law lobby want to tell you with these studies that, by the way, have assumptions that would make a professor's skin crawl about what the employment rate is or all of this other stuff. And they're just a joke, but they're not unpacked or dissected by any of the media, unfortunately. So I'm glad you're doing it.
I appreciate your being here to help us understand this. Now, I want to be clear, Scott and I are not calling for huge tariffs across the board, or tariffs on everything, or tariffs on every country. What we're saying is that this is a legitimate policy tool, and we need to think about, number one, what is the U.S. background tariff relative to all of our trading partners, and how do we have something more like reciprocity? How do we use this particular tool to get the kind of behaviors we want? To raise standards for workers and wages, to knock out stuff that is environmentally devastating, to just knock out altogether markets for slave labor goods. The previous administration's trade representative, a guy named Robert Lighthizer, very smart guy, he basically made the point, hey, tariffs are a tool I can use to try and get certain things done.
You know, Trump imposed tariffs on some Chinese products. It had an impact. It has brought down the bilateral trade deficit with China. It has not necessarily reshored a ton of jobs to the United States because there was no other policy backing that up. It dispersed it. And some of that is Chinese imports being diverted to other countries. Some of that is Walmart sourcing from other countries. There's a variety of reasons for it. But fundamentally, to bring those jobs back to the United States, you need the tariffs and you need the public investment that we got through infrastructure, clean energy manufacturing, semiconductors. You need the procurement policies that make sure that those opportunities are going to American workers. And you need consumer incentives to buy U.S. EVs as that industry gets jump-started. But again, from the beginning of our country, tariffs have been viewed as a tool to incubate industries in our country. But that has to be coupled with investments. And that's what Trump missed. That's what Biden is getting here. And that's why you're seeing a record factory construction boom in the United States. You're seeing battery production that's coming onshore. You're seeing semiconductor fabs built across the United States. You're seeing solar panel factories start to be built. They need more trade help too, but you're starting to see that. And it is not an accident. It is a response to policy that included tariffs and public investment and incentives to build here and to buy here.
So it seems like we're going to see a boom coming up in manufacturing capacity and jobs as this money starts to translate from a boom in new construction to build new factories here. For all of our wonky friends, there are those specific bills that Biden got through Congress, Inflation Reduction Act. It was the brand, but it had all kinds of incentives to invest in domestic solar production, domestic electric vehicle, EV production, the batteries, the cars, all of these jobs of the future where we're otherwise importing this stuff. Number one, we put the tariffs up for some space, so we don't have incoming floods, and then investment in actually both the making of the factories, but also incentives for consumers. If you've always wanted to be able to get an electric vehicle and or you want solar on your house, thanks to these bills that Biden passed, we can get tax break. So it makes it more affordable for you. That's creating the demand. So just to send us out, Scott, when you're looking at the future, after all those years you have fought to try and have manufacturing come back online, talk to us about where you think we're headed and what we need to do going forward to get to that place you've been fighting for.
Lori, thank you for that. And thank you for your own work on this, which has been very essential to policy gains and to this deeper understanding. I think that we're at a pivotal moment. And I view the start of all these public investments that you just mentioned as a start and not the last word. They have to be just a start. We have so much more work to do. And I also view the tariff policy as just a start as well. It needs to be strategic, but it needs to be expanded. And let's think of it this way, just to popularize this. You know those big sound mixer boards that DJs have? That is industrial policy. And you have like 8 or 9 different levers and you can move them up and down. And there's the public investment, the consumer incentives, the tariffs. If you break off the tariff handle, the song is going to suck. If you break off the public investment handle, the sound is going to suck. You got to have all of them working together. And so, you know, if it's DJ Biden or if there's another DJ, they got to be using all of those in accord. But tariffs have to be a part of that along with the rest of the industrial policy.
There you have it, folks. That is the way we can go forward and rebuild our country's manufacturing. And I actually think that is a really important element of preserving our democracy, because it's giving opportunities for people across the country to be invested in this country, which will invest in them, in recreating good-paying middle-class jobs that got gutted by 30 years of trade policy that made a lot of people feel left behind and dissed. So it's not just for our being able to get the things we need, heaven forbid we have another major disaster like COVID. It's not just our national security. It's not just economic fairness. It's also our democracy, and I am thrilled to have had Scott help unpack this for us about how this set of tools can actually put us in the right direction after years of getting it wrong. Thank you, Scott, for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining Rethinking Trade, and until next time, stay safe.